startups, they really love to move fast and break things.
Right. Yeah. That's the classic motto.
But you know, what happens when the thing you break is actually your own company, and just simply because you, well, hallucinated your own maturity?
Oh, man. You see it all the time.
You really do. Like, a founder gets this killer idea. Maybe they build a really sleek app they incorporate, and instantly they just operate under this total delusion that they're running a seasoned, fully fledged enterprise.
It is a massive psychological trap, really. I mean, they buy the huge whiteboard, they hire their buddy as like a chief strategy officer, and they just assume they've already crossed the finish line.
Yeah, before they've even made contact with the actual market.
Exactly.
Well, welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're really focusing on you, the listener, and we're bringing you a massive reality check.
A necessary one, I'd say.
Definitely. We're looking at the stark, really highly complex gap between what founders think it takes to run a mature company and the harsh gauntlet of actually achieving it. We're pulling our insights today from a really comprehensive 2026 guide by Fred Cohen.
Right, published through Angel to Exit.
Yeah, which is, for those who don't know, the largest incubator and accelerator in the San Francisco Bay Area region. And the piece is titled, What Managed Maturity Looks Like.
And honestly, it is a necessary bucket of cold water for, well, anyone trying to build a lasting organization.
Yeah.
Because Angel to Exit has a very aggressive operational goal. Like, they try to move startups from having absolutely zero maturity to what they call managed maturity in just 1 or 2 years.
Which sounds incredibly fast.
It is, but the source material is brutally honest about the actual reality.
Yeah.
Even for a high-growth company with, a stellar team, reaching that level of performance typically takes 3 to 5 years.
Okay, let's unpack this because that timeline is critical.
Well,
3 to 5 years from the first sale, not from the day you, like, come up with a logo or secure your first seed funding.
right, from when money actually changes hands.
Exactly. And Angel to Exit actually uses a tool called DrewWiz to measure this, kind of serving as a mirror to show founders exactly how immature their operations actually are.
Yeah, it's a harsh mirror.
Totally. But before we get into the psychology of how companies fail to mature, we really have to define what actual maturity looks like. The source doesn't just treat maturity as a vibe, you know.
No, not at all.
It breaks it down into this massive framework of six distinct pillars.
Right. And you have to think of these pillars as the actual physical infrastructure of your business. Like, let's look at the defensive side of that infrastructure first. Specifically, legal, regulatory, and intellectual property.
Go ahead.
A mature company isn't just filing a trademark and, calling it a day. From a legal standpoint, they have crystal clear provenance for the legal entity from day one
Right.
and binding contractual instruments for every single worker, partner, and affiliate.
Not just a handshake deal.
Exactly. Plus, there are systematic plans in place for responding to regulatory events before they even happen.
Wait, before we move on, the source specifically talks about protecting your special sauce using something called picket patents.
Yes.
I know what a standard patent is, but like, what makes it a picket patent?
It's a really great distinction, actually. Imagine a wooden picket fence surrounding a really valuable piece of property.
Okay.
You aren't just patenting your core product or your main invention. You are strategically patenting all the minor alternative methods and processes around it.
Oh, wow. So you're basically blocking them in.
Yeah, you're building a fence so competitors can't even get close to your core IP without infringing on something.
That's smart.
And in a mature company, you aren't just hoarding that intellectual property in some vault, right? You are actively tracking trade secrets and strategically monetizing that IP for actual economic advantage.
Okay, so that's the defensive armor. What about the growth engine? The source brings up marketing, sales, execution, and fulfillment.
Right. This is where we look at how the company actually moves capital. A mature company has what the author calls functioning sales sieves.
A sieve,
Yeah.
like a strainer you use in the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly like that.
How does that translate to a sales team?
Well, most immature companies treat sales like a giant net. They just try to catch as many leads as possible, right?
Just dragging the bottom of the ocean.
Right. But a mature company treats it like a sieve. It's a highly calibrated filter designed to let the wrong customers fall through immediately.
Oh, I see.
So your expensive sales team is only spending time on the highly qualified leads that remain in the sieve. And furthermore, they're tracking the changing characteristics of those customers over time.
That makes a lot of sense.
And when it comes to fulfillment, it's not just about delivering the product, it's about redundant supply chains.
Okay, I hear that, but practically speaking, How does a startup with, limited capital actually build a redundant supply chain before they have massive cash flow?
Right.
Isn't that a luxury for like Fortune 500 companies?
It sounds like it, but it's less about having massive warehouses everywhere and more about dynamic flexibility.
Okay.
The source emphasizes that fulfillment costs must be systematically reduced while maintaining quality, and your capacity has to dynamically scale up and down based on predicted volume.
Oh, up and down, yeah.
If your only supplier goes bankrupt, or if you suddenly get like 10 times the orders you expected, the wheels don't fall off.
Got it. Which brings us to the foundation supporting all of this, which is governance and finance. A mature company has executive teams with specific, recent, relevant vertical experience.
Yes, not just the founder's college roommate.
Exactly. And I noticed the source heavily emphasizes ESG, environment, society, and governance.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that considered a core pillar of maturity and not just like a corporate PR strategy?
What's fascinating here is that the author treats ESG as a proactive friction reduction mechanism.
Friction reduction.
Yeah. An immature company reacts to ethical crises or environmental blowback after it happens. But a mature company anticipates societal friction and actively builds positive effects for their constituents into their governance model.
So it's basically risk mitigation.
Exactly, it's risk mitigation. And financially, the pillar is brutal but really simple. You must be cash flow positive, have more than 6 months of cash or fungible assets on hand, and your investments need to involve priced instruments.
Meaning the investment actually reflects real-world risks and rewards, not just like a speculative valuation pulled out of thin air.
Precisely. When you step back and look at these pillars, governance, sales, execution, IP, finance, legal, Bestel, they aren't just a to-do list. They are interconnected living ecosystems.
It really reframes the whole idea of a startup. It makes me think of the music industry.
Oh, how so?
Well, an immature founder is like someone who buys an incredibly expensive vintage electric guitar, plugs it into a massive amp in their bedroom, and just assumes they are completely ready to headline a global stadium tour.
Well, that's good.
Right. But true maturity isn't the guitar. Maturity is having the roadies, the sound engineers, the tour managers, the backup equipment, and the airtight legal contracts with the venues.
Yes.
Because that underlying crew is what actually keeps the tour alive when the amp blows out in a new city.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize the infrastructure. I really like that. But, having the crew is only half the battle.
True.
The next question the source addresses is how a company actually learns to manage that crew. Like, how do you measure the climb from playing your guitar in the bedroom to running that massive stadium tour?
Right, because we're moving from the physical pillars of the business to the psychological and operational steps a company has to take to master them.
Exactly.
And the author uses a framework derived from the capability maturity model to map this all out.
Right, and you have to climb it rung by rung. You can't skip steps. Once you get past simply, not doing something at all, you hit the initial level.
Okay.
This is the realm of the heroic founder. You complete a task, say, closing a major enterprise client for the very first time. It requires immense, like 100-hour-a-week effort. It's totally chaotic, but it works.
But you can't build a company on adrenaline,
No, you really can't.
which means you have to jump to the next level, which is repeatable. And this feels like a massive psychological hurdle to me.
Oh, it absolutely is.
Because to be repeatable, you have to achieve statistically similar results. So the process is predictable enough to train someone else. You are literally trying to remove the genius founder from the equation.
It is an enormous ego hit for a lot of people, but it is totally mandatory. If the company only survives because you personally pull a rabbit out of a hat every single quarter, you aren't a business.
You're a magician.
Right, you're a magician. Once you make a process repeatable, then you can advance to the defined level.
And what that look like?
This is where you formally document the process, measure what goes wrong, and implement specific fixes.
Okay, so we're documenting, we're fixing. But AngelDAG's ultimate goal is the next rung up, which is managed.
Yes. At the managed level, you aren't just looking at past mistakes anymore. You are measuring processes in real time to make immediate adjustments.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you are keeping everything operating within desired parameters with a really high degree of certainty.
So what does this all mean? Because I have to push back here for a second.
Sure.
There is actually one level above managed on this ladder.
Yeah.
That's called optimized.
Yes, there is.
So if our goal is to build the ultimate world-class company, shouldn't founders be chasing optimization? Why is the source telling them to stop at managed?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the source explicitly warns that Optimize is basically a
A
ghost.
ghost.
Yeah. The author claims that even if you achieve perfect optimization for a single second, it would vanish the very next second simply because the world around you changes.
Right.
A competitor drops their price, a new regulation is passed, maybe a supply chain bottleneck occurs.
So chasing optimization is just beating your head against a wall.
I'd argue it's even more complex than that. It's a fundamental misunderstanding of what a business actually is.
Okay, explain that.
Think of managed maturity, like driving a modern car with adaptive cruise control and lane assist.
Oh, I like this.
Optimized implies that the road ahead of you is perfectly straight, perfectly dry, and empty forever, so you can just lock the steering wheel in place.
Which is never true.
Exactly. The real world has curves, it has crosswinds, and traffic. Managed means the car's sensors expect the friction. They're constantly taking in data and making micro adjustments so you don't end up in a ditch.
That's a great point.
You don't need to be perfectly optimized. You need to be highly adaptable.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. If the roadmap is so logical, if we know we need these pillars and we know we need to climb this capability ladder to reach that sweet spot of adaptability, why do so many brilliant, really well-funded founders still crash and burn?
Because theory is clean, but reality is messy.
Very true.
The author outlines six phases of explosive growth that act as an absolute gauntlet for founders. It is highly emotional and incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, let's walk through those.
Yeah.
Phase one is setting it up,
Yeah.
sort of the honeymoon. You anticipate rapid growth, you calculate your future wealth, and you just assume your spreadsheet is reality.
Yep.
And the author brilliantly drops a quote from the 1800s by Prussian Field Marshal Helmuth von Moltke the Elder. He says, "No plan survives contact with the enemy."
Which is the perfect warning for phase two, first major success.
The plan actually worked once.
Exactly. The team is wildly enthusiastic, but this success almost always comes from that initial heroic effort we discussed earlier.
Right, the 100-hour weeks.
Right.
And that breeds hubris, which sets the lethal trap of phase three, which is rapid growth anticipation.
Yes, you succeeded once, so you assume you know everything. And because of this overconfidence, founders start over-investing heavily. They spend their limited resources anticipating growth that just hasn't materialized yet.
Wait, I have to challenge this, though. Every venture capitalist on Earth will tell you that you have to spend money to make money.
Right.
If you just landed a huge client, you have to hire a massive sales team and lease a bigger facility. You have to scale to meet demand, don't you?
There is a vital difference between scaling to meet actual demand and scaling to meet imagined demand.
Oh.
The trap is building out the expensive infrastructure of those six pillars before the reliable revenue stream exists to support them.
Right.
If you buy the stadium tour buses before anyone has even bought a ticket and the rapid growth doesn't happen, the plane simply flies into the ground.
Wow. Which brings us to the proving ground of phase four. Rapid growth or not.
Right.
And the source lays out three possible outcomes here. The first is, oops, you overspent, the next sale didn't happen, and you collapse. Game over.
Game over.
But the second outcome is where the real insight is, I think. The second outcome is slow.
And intuitively, a founder hears slow growth and completely panics. You get a sale, but then you struggle for months to get another one. You are constantly fighting just to reach cash flow break even.
But the author argues this is actually a massive hidden benefit. Let's really dig into this because I think this is the core aha moment of the entire deep dive.
I agree.
Why is near-death struggling better than immediate success?
Because a near-death cash flow squeeze is the ultimate forge for managed maturity.
How so?
Think about it. If you have unlimited venture capital, you can just gloss over your inefficient processes. You throw money at the problem.
Right.
But if you are forced to go slow and you are terrified of missing payroll, you have to cut costs. You have to implement strict controls. You are literally forced to document your processes, diagnose your failures, and measure your metrics in real time.
Because you simply cannot afford a single mistake.
Exactly. You don't have the runway for mistakes.
So it forces you to build the lane assist sensors. You move from the chaos of initial to manage not because you really want to, but because it's the absolute only way to survive.
Yes. Slow provides the friction required to build a real company.
That is wild. But what about the third outcome of phase four? Fast. I look at modern startup culture, and fast is worshipped.
Oh,
It's
totally.
all explosive, unicorn-level, hyper-growth. Move fast and break things.
Yeah.
But the author basically says, too fast is a death sentence. Why?
Well, the author speaks from personal, really painful experience here. He talks about moving too fast, overspending, and suddenly hitting the top end of an acceleration curve, only to realize the market was saturated.
Ouch.
Yeah. The danger of fast is twofold. First, structurally, you are outrunning your own headlights. When you are moving at warp speed, you have no baseline data.
And without data, you can't measure anything.
Right. And as we learned from the capability ladder, if you can't measure it, you cannot manage it.
You're accelerating a rocket so fast that the G-forces are going to tear the structural integrity of the ship apart before you ever even reach orbit.
Exactly. And the second danger is psychological. When revenue is spiking and everyone is telling you you're a total genius, you start to believe your own hype.
The hubris.
The hubris totally blinds the decision makers. You start ignoring the structural realities of those six pillars until it's far too late to steer the ship away from the obstacle.
Man. Which brings us to the inevitable endgame. Phase 5 is nothing lasts forever, and Phase 6 is the squeeze.
Right. Whether you hit explosive growth, stagnation, or a sudden collapse, the ride always ends. The market shifts, maybe resources run out, or the founders just burn out.
Yeah.
Phase 5 is all about timeliness. It's getting out before the opportunity vanishes, but not so early that you miss the peak. And Phase 6, the squeeze, is how companies die. And the source notes, it is highly painful for the top decision makers who have to absorb the impact.
So let me ask a pretty blunt question here.
Go for it.
If the squeeze is truly inevitable and every single company's ride eventually comes to an end, is the ultimate goal of achieving managed maturity simply learning exactly when to jump off the ship before it hits the iceberg?
That's a great point, and this raises an important question about what maturity actually buys you. It's not just an eject button.
Okay.
The author's core thesis is that maturity dictates your survival at every stage. It determines whether your ship can weather a sudden market downturn without sinking.
Right.
It determines whether you have the operational efficiency to maximize the profits of an economic upturn. And yes, it gives you the clarity to execute a strategic exit when the timing is perfect. It is the definitive line between a lucky amateur riding a wave and a seasoned professional actually steering the vessel.
And the most vital takeaway from the author is that this cannot be theorized. You cannot build maturity on a whiteboard. You need substantial transaction volume to generate actual statistical data.
Absolutely.
Without real sales, real fulfillment, and real payments, you are basically just playing a simulation.
And, you know, you don't have to navigate that simulation entirely alone. The source provides a highly practical resource for founders currently in the trenches. Angel to Exit hosts free monthly advisory calls.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, they take place on the first and third Thursday of most months at 0900 Pacific time. It's a great opportunity to present your specific situation and learn from the fiction of others.
That's a huge resource. So, to distill everything we've unpacked today, building a company is an incredibly complex ecosystem. You have to build out the massive defensive and operational infrastructure of those six pillars.
Right.
You have to climb the capability ladder, stripping away the ego of the genius founder to create defined, managed systems. And you have to survive the psychological gauntlet of the six phases of growth.
Yes.
Recognizing that the struggle is slow is often the very thing that saves you from the lethal hubris of fast.
It requires 3 to 5 years of intense friction. Real sales, real failures, and hard data.
Which leaves us with something crucial for you, the listener, to ponder as you look at the business landscape tomorrow.
Definitely.
The source material makes a mathematically backed, battle-tested case that true managed maturity demands real-world friction, painful adjustments, and above all else, time.
Time is the big one.
Right. So if that is objectively true, is today's intense business culture a culture that unconditionally worships the idea of hyperfast growth and overnight success, is it actually structurally opposed to building a truly mature, lasting company?
It is a profound contradiction, honestly, that every modern founder must eventually reckon with.
It really is. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it helps you look past the hallucination of instant success and, you know, gives you a much clearer map of the mountain you are actually trying to climb. Until next time, keep building, keep learning, and keep asking the hard questions.